You're listening to Jumping the Wealth Curve with your host, Edward Bau.
For most of my life, I've been riding and racing dirt bike motorcycles, so it was natural to say Jumping the Wealth Curve.
When he's not on his bike, Ed is helping families retire successfully as a certified financial planner and five-star wealth manager at Smallwood Wealth Management.
There isn't a one-size-fits-all solution for everything, so we're talking about finances and a financial plan. We need to stay flexible.
Now, here's your host, Ed Bau.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Jumping the Wealth Curve. Today's podcast, 2024, Where is the Time Gone? Here we are towards the end of the first quarter of 2024, and I just want to give you kind of a market update to start. And so let me give you some figures. And this data, I believe, is from March 25th, so it might be not all the way to the end of the quarter, but it's pretty close. So S&P 500 is up 10.12%. The Russell 1000 growth is up 12.08%, and Russell 1000 value up just over 7%, and the NASDAQ up 9.63%. NASDAQ more tech heavy. I gave you the growth and value for Russell 1000, which is also more tech centric. Just to give you perspective that growth is still outpacing value. What we've seen over probably the last 5 to 10 years is growth has outpaced value. That isn't always the case. There's a lot of academic research that says over the long haul, value gives you more return for the amount of risk that you're taking within the market in a general sense. So we are still, you know, looking for that value play. And I think you'll hear a little something more in the podcast that will gear us toward value, but let's get there. The other big metric is the 10-year Treasury as of March 22nd was at 4.22%. Why this is important and why I'm bringing it up is at the end of 23, we were at 3.88%. So we have gone up 34 basis points. And let me explain what basis points means if you're not in the industry. Basis points is simply this: 100 basis points means 1%. So when I say 34 basis points, that's 0.34 of a percent. So it's a portion of a percent. If I said 200 basis points, that would be 2%. So we are up 34 basis points from the end of 2023. Why I'm going to say this is unusual is in normal economic conditions, when interest rates are rising, the stock market usually goes down. I started the podcast with, hey, the S&P 500 is up 10%. And I also just told you that the 10-year Treasury is up 34 basis points. So they're both up. That's very unusual. The question is why? Investors, in my opinion, are now equating higher interest rates to a more resilient economy. If the economy is more resilient and it is actually growing, that's good for stocks, good for companies, good for investors. That's, I believe, where we're at in this kind of investment cycle. All right. Now, the last metric that I want to give you is the 30-year Treasuries at just about 7%. If you didn't catch my real estate podcast from early December, I think we were at around 8% at that point, and I thought we were topping out there. So they're making me look good. It's always nice to be right once in a while. So my favorite saying is a blind squirrel finds a nut once in a while. So that's me. We're at 7% on the 30-year fixed mortgage. I probably think we're going to be sticking around there for the foreseeable future, and I'll tell you why in a minute. I don't think it's going to go 6% in the next 12 months. Let's just put it that way. There is going to be some rate cuts coming, and I'll get to that in a minute. So the Federal Open Market Committee, the FOMC, met last week, and they revised GDP growth upward, so they were thinking was going to kind of be flatter or lower than what they actually came in this year with. They've revised it upward. And by the way, the FOMC directs monetary policy, which we're talking about interest rates. They projected, they gave guidance that said they were going to cut rates 3 times this year. we probably would have expected one already or right around now, and I don't think it's going to happen because of they're revising GDP growth up. They're also the PCE. I'm going to give you all these acronyms, okay? So PCE stands for Personal Consumption Expenditures, which is in a shorter name is inflation. So January came in at 2.4%. On a 12-month year-to-year, it's actually at 2.8%. That's pretty normalized. It's much better than what 8% that we were at last year at certain points. So, but it wasn't as low it has been in the last 10 years, which I would argue was very low and almost disinflationary, which we don't want to be there either. So I believe their target is about 2.5%. The 2.8 is very close. But they're seeing, again, they're revised upward, GDP upward. So remember the purpose of cutting these interest rates or raising interest rates in 2022. It was to slow down economic activity. And basically what we might have heard or not heard is that when they do these type of interest rate moves, they're trying to slow the economy down. And they want it to be a soft landing, meaning we're slowing it, and then we can start cutting again, which is kind of what you're hearing right now. Three interest rate cuts this year. They revised 2025 downward. They thought they were going to cut rates more in 2025. They're now saying it's only going to be three. I think that's nice to hear. I don't think, you know, till we get to the end of 2024, I don't think it really matters. It's just their kind of sentiment is what you're looking for. Is like, hey, they were going to cut it a lot more. They're not going to. So we're talking about a soft landing. Everybody was talking about a recession in 2023. And I thought you wouldn't hear anything about a recession until at least the summertime. Because by the way, the powers to be, there's another committee that actually tells us when we're actually in a recession, but they're 6 to 9 months behind when the recession starts. So by the time you get into it and we hear all that noise coming from the media, guess what? It's already old news. So you're getting, you know, the media is hyping it up because it's new to them and they got to project this stuff. So you watch them, but it's old news. So my prediction last year was if there was a recession, it was going to be later in the second quarter. It actually pushed out until later in the year, and now we're kind of looking. They're talking about recession in 2024. They're not talking about a hard landing. And let me explain what a hard landing is. Back in 2022, they raised interest rates quicker than they had ever raised rates ever, I believe, in the United States history. So when you raise rates and slow the economic growth down so quickly, it's like you're locking the brakes up on a locomotive. Okay, and that's just a hard stop, a hard landing. There, that didn't happen. Usually, when you know they start reversing trend and start cutting rates, and there was projections back in 2023 that they were going to start cutting rates late in 2023. I was never of that camp. I didn't believe that. I happened to be right on that one. This time, now they're starting to talk about three rate cuts this year, and now you can already see. I think it's getting pushed off later in the year. So we talked about recession, and I believe we're in it. I think people are starting to feel the pinch. By the way, one of the revised numbers from the FOMC was that unemployment will go higher by the end of 2024. That actually is okay. We're not talking leaps and bounds of a huge increase in the unemployment number, but unemployment is historically low, and there actually is a certain percentage that you would like to have an unemployment in a healthy economy. It's just the way that things churn out. People get unemployed, they go back to work, et cetera, et cetera. So don't be fearful of I'm saying, oh, you know, an upward unemployment number is a good thing. We're talking historically low rates, you know, levels here. We're talking like 3%. It's really low. So with that said, what should we expect? I just said they're going to push. I feel like they're going to pull the trigger on one rate cut probably in the next 3 months. I think it's a test of water and see how things react. As long as numbers don't get dramatically different than what they're hearing. And then maybe, and this is just me spitballing, in my opinion, they maybe push off those rates, cuts later in the year. The problem I see with my own, what I'm saying right now, is we do have an election at the end of the year, okay? So I don't know how much that comes into play, because you don't, I don't know if they want to be seen as, oh, we're cutting rates and making things look better. And, you know, that influences one party or the other. Again, this is not a political statement. It's just a statement of what they could possibly be thinking over at the, you know, the FOMC. So with that, what are the key takeaways here? The key takeaways are, I believe interest rates will likely stay higher longer, right? We just saw a 34 basis point increase already in the first 3 months for the 10-year Treasury. And the environment of higher rates is going to push us into an investment world that I would say, you know, attractively priced stocks, not a lot of interest rate risk within the company from their debt structure, prudent cost management in the companies. And everything I just said really pushes toward the value side of the investment world, right? The value side basically means you have a company, their balance sheet, their financials look really good, but their stock maybe isn't reflecting those that balance sheet or their financials as well, which is basically what I said, you know, low debt structure, low interest rate risk, cost management structure, you know, price is attractive for the stock. Maybe, the price isn't reflective of how actually good the company's going. That's all value investing. Whenever we talk about recession periods, value investing gets goes to the top of the list. So that's what I'm kind of seeing. Again, I in our own portfolios here at Small World Wealth, we have a diversified portfolio. We have a lot of asset classes covered. We do have a tilt to the value portion on some mid-sized companies and small-sized companies, because from the academic research that we follow, that is where you get the most bang for your buck over longer periods of time. This is all past data that it's based on. New data is always new data. So obviously results are not guaranteed. It's past performance. But again, we just try to make educated guesses. And you know, that data is very hard to dispute. It's over 80-year-old data. So with that, that's my kind of takeaways is interest rates will be higher. I think equity still have room to grow. We are hitting S&P highs here, you know, even at the end of last year recently. And everybody, I've been around the block a few times, you know, maybe the gray shows that. And people, when we get to these top levels, and I'm in agreement, like, are we getting near the top of the market? So that's always the kind of discussion when you hear the talking heads. And I feel like the way companies are positioned now, they're more globalized. The investment world and the economies are more intertwined than they ever been. I believe that there is actually upward movement. A lot of this, and also you could also look at a lot of the stocks in the S&P 500, the top tier stocks, they're calling it the Magnificent Seven. It used to be called FANG. These were the Facebooks of the world, the Netflix, the NVIDIAs. They were kind of driving a lot of the growth of the S&P 500. Well, if you're talking about a very limited segment of, you know, companies or stocks that are driving the S&P 500, there's a whole bunch of others in there. So if those are kind of lagging and now we're kind of seeing them coming along for the ride, which we did see back in, I think it was 2021, we saw a more diversified, you know, S&P 500, at more companies adding to the actual return, which is always a good thing. I think we're going to get back to that point. So, you know, that was my takeaway is, I think there'll be more diversified, you know, people getting on this upward movement train instead of just, you know, people in the first car. So with that, I'm going to, you know, I'm always going to circle this back to the planning side of this. And as this is all great data and market information, and we all love investing and everything, I'll always defer back to strategy and what's going on in your financial plan that This is great for the segments within the plan that we will be talking about the investment world. And in my mind, there's potentially 27 different components of a financial plan. What I've just mentioned is maybe 6 or 7 of those 27 components. So you can see this is when I kind of reel us back in and go back to the financial plan has a lot of power. And being diversified and integrated with all your decisions in those 27 boxes is the key to having a successful plan, or giving your plan to have that most, the biggest percentage of probability that it is going to be successful. So having, this is great. Everybody, we all love having winning years in the market, and I love the markets as part of the plan. But if this is your only solution for accumulation side or retirement side, I think you'd you need to have a bigger conversation. There's other things that you can do in your plan. We know there'll be down markets, and one of the podcasts we'll be dropping after this is making market volatility your friend, which will, I think, is a good follow-up to this podcast to say, okay, this is great, we're up 10% this year, but what happens when we're down 15% or some of those big black swan years that we're down bigger? You know, do you have other things going on in your plan that I'm going to say maybe compensates for this portion of the plan? I'll give you a micro version. In our portfolio, we don't have everything doing the same thing at the same time. We want some things going up and maybe some things are not going up at the same time, because we want diversifiers within the portfolio. So I think I belabored the point enough. If you need help with that, your financial plan, you can always go on our website, www.smallwoodwealth.com, or call us at 732-542-1565. Mike would love to talk to you and get you scheduled for a wealth curve pressure identifier conversation. It's a 30 or 40 minute conversation that just talks about you, and we get a better understanding of what's going on in your plan and from a very high level. If there's something that you would want me to talk about, please put it in the comments section. I'd be happy to oblige if it makes sense, of course. And by the way, I mentioned that we're going to drop Making market volatility your friend. We're also going to get into some key components. I talked about 27 boxes in there, 27 components of a financial plan. I'm going to break that down into 3 segments over the next 3 podcasts, and we're going to get into real detail of each component of the financial plan. As always, I want to thank my Curve Jumping Nation for clicking in and tuning in. And I also, if you're new to the podcast, thank you for jumping on board the curve. And I hope you stay loyal. Remember to subscribe. Click and subscribe, please. It's not for monetary purposes. I just want to know people are actually listening. So if it turns into a monetary thing, awesome. If not, oh well. So with that, everybody have a great day. Till next time.
Have a retirement or financial planning question for Ed? Connect now at smallwoodwealth.com. And while you're at it, click that subscribe button.
Jumping the Wealth Curve is brought to you by Edward Bao, an investment advisor representative of Smallwood Wealth Management, a registered investment advisor. Strategies mentioned may not be suitable for everyone, and the information expressed does not take into account your specific situation or objectives and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for you. Information has been obtained from sources that are deemed to be reliable. Their accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed. Always consult with a qualified investment, legal, or tax professional before taking any action, as information and/or opinions are subject to change without notice. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Past performance cannot be used as an indicator to determine future results. Smallwood Wealth Management provides content that is true and accurate as of the date of publishing. However, we give no assurance or warranty regarding the accuracy, timeliness, or applicability of the content. We assume no responsibility for information contained on this website or podcast and disclaim all liability in respect to all information, including but not limited to any liability for errors in accuracy, omissions, misleading, or defamatory statements.